I can't see myself. I don't like this.
Oh, here we go. It's Jeffrey. It's me, Jeffrey. And it's week 7. How we ended up this way. Here we go. Jeffrey, we got to get one for Kristen in there. And then it says, let's check in. How do you feel today? Hashtag, what's your emoji? It's so abrupt. It really does drive me bonkers. I got to make a whole new thing.
One of these things will be on
with my I thought that was a track.
What, of me talking?
Yeah, I thought it was like a track you did. I was like, all right.
No, because I figured out one of the last shows, because Steve always, like, he set it up so that it mutes everybody because he hated that I would always talk through the theme music. He don't care for that, so he's muted me. Hey, kids, how are we doing? So tonight alongside of me, I got Mr. Brian BC. How you doing with your Angelique Bates house going on behind you? I didn't know you and Angelique lived together.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't know I owned a grand piano.
It's exciting stuff. And then Blowmates tonight. I got Mr. Dana. How you doing?
I'm good.
And then alongside of Dana. I can't hear. Alongside Dana, we've got girl, how you doing, Kristen? How you doing?
I'm peachy. How are you?
I'm all right, kids. I'm all right. It's been an interesting week. Miss Kelly's off tonight. She's having a little trouble. So we're here. And as you can see, the show is titled Atomic Habits, Chapter 8 through 14. And that is not happening tonight because Kelly's off and she is the leader of the book club. So we're not talking about that. So if you tuned in thinking we're talking about Atomic Habits, I hate to break your bubble. When Kelly's back, we'll talk about the book. So that's that.
Ta-da.
Here we are. But I don't know if you guys, what's going on? Did anybody have anything interesting happen over the weekend or the week since we've been off? Anybody?
My husband smashed our car in.
What had happened was, Brian, what?
Well, no, what had happened was last night we got like all of a sudden this like lake effect snowstorm. We got like a whole bunch of snow. Oh my God, we got like 6 or 8 inches.
Not bad.
That much.
Usually it's a good night, but last night was not a good night. but anyways, we live in Marcellus where there's like giant hills, and he got going out from the top of the hill and smashed into a guardrail, and that's all she wrote. He's okay.
As long as he's okay.
Well, that's inconvenient at most, then.
Yeah, he has a bruise on his arm because I guess when the airbag comes out, like the thing opens up and it whacked him in the arm. So.
Yeah, I've been in one car accident where the airbags went off and my entire left side was bruised from like my knee to my shoulder.
I heard it can burn you too.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Like chemical burn?
Yeah.
He didn't get that. But...
No.
So that was our excitement last night.
Ooh.
Fine. What time did that happen?
Around midnight.
Oh, that's gotta be fun.
So I had to put the baby in the car. Well, first of all, I had to wake him up because he was sleeping. Put him in the car to go get Joe, and then we had to wait for the tow truck, and they said like 3 hours. So the cop told us we didn't have to wait because it was like not too far from our house, and the tow truck was just gonna come tow it anyways. So. I guess that it was like far enough off the road where it wasn't a hazard, so they let us go.
Nice. It was lucky.
Yeah, it was wicked lucky. Well, not for the car, but for Joe, it was wicked lucky.
Honey, that's okay. With the price of cars, you'll probably make some dough and be able to get a nice new car if you can find one.
Girl, that car only had 7,000 miles on it.
Okay, that sucks.
Did you own it or lease it? Or were you buying it or leasing it?
We were buying it, but we have gap insurance.
Okay.
So, like, we should be fine.
I always bitch at all my friends. I'm like, make sure you get the gap insurance.
This is the first time I've ever gotten it, actually. So, I feel lucky.
I don't know that so much you need it in this climate with cars today, but it's still an important thing to have, because if you're upside down, man, that's not a good feeling when you, you need it. It ain't cute, man. It's not cute. Mm-mm. No, not at all. Dana, what about you? Any car crashes? Did you, you know, what happened? How's are you recovering from Budapest and your orgies?
Yeah, I'm good. My friend Scott gave me a board game. That's new.
A board game, huh? Yeah, what board game?
It's called Creature Comforts. You're little woodland creatures, and you have to build the coziest den for winter. And whoever builds the coziest den wins the game.
Dave's here. He's listening from a distance. So I add my hilarious quips whenever you deem necessary. Well, thank you, Dave, for tuning in. We love you. So you got an interesting board game. Is it like related to Dungeons and Dragons?
No, it's just like, I don't know, there's dice and little wooden figurines, and you go around the board and you collect different things for winter. And you make a little cozy den to like snuggle in with your family. It's nice. It's a nice little family game.
Oh, it's a family game.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That's sweet.
Okay.
That's as exciting as my world's been. I was spray painting a bow, an arrow. Brian's gone.
He may have muted himself.
No, he's gone. Look at him.
No, he said it just kicked him out.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Uh-oh.
We might need Dave to come on in.
All right.
We'll
just have Dave do it.
Dave, you're up.
All right, Kristen, what about you? Anything going on? Did you? I heard maybe you had something start this week or something.
I did. I started a new job today. I did. So
what is it?
Ta-da. It's starting at this place that serves coffee.
Oh,
yeah,
my favorite kind of place.
I like know, those places. Beautiful. So I'm very excited. So. We shall see. It's going to be very fun. My nephew also works for said company and has been working there since he was 16 and absolutely adores it. So they are, I'm excited. So
oh, that's fun.
Yeah. It's something new. Gets me out of the house.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, baby. Listen, I found a new little coffee shop around the corner. Well, Country Corner is about 25 minutes from here. But I didn't know we had one, and they serve like my favorite. I like a Frappuccino. I like a frozen coffee,
mm-hmm.
you know, blended frozen beverage. I don't care what time of year it is. It was good. It was $7.50. It was worth every penny. I'll be stopping back frequently.
Sometimes you need those little treats. When we grew up, where Kelly and I grew up, where there was only one traffic light, well, that's my town was only one traffic light, and more cows than people. We had to drive to the big town of East Aurora. That was the big town.
Mm.
And that's where the coffee shop was. And that wasn't until we were like in high school.
Tim Hortons.
Jeffrey, remember the Red Monk? Did you ever go to the Red Monk when that was open?
The cafe downtown?
Yeah.
Was that geared towards the teens or whatever?
Yes. That was where I drank the coffees with my friends. That was when they let us smoke cigarettes inside.
Yeah, I was busy sneaking into bars.
Oh, we're drinking coffee and smoking and skateboarding and being arrested.
I didn't drink coffee until I was like in my 20s.
Yeah. It took me, I did a little bit in my 20s. I stopped for years, and then in my 30s, I really kind of got back into it.
I started when I was like 2 or 3 and have not stopped, and I'm going to be 45 next week. So, you know, didn't stop my growth. I'm good.
That's true. I did used to dunk toast in my in coffee. It was like an Italian thing.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma used to make me toast and coffee when I was like 5, 6, 7.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like mostly milk and a little bit of coffee.
But you never did that?
No, my grandmother had ketchup and toast.
Ketchup and did she put ketchup on eggs too?
I don't know. Yes, they did. They were very... She wasn't Italian. You know, it was the grandfather that was Italian. I don't know what the hell she was. And they were weird. You know what I mean? Like, and my mother, like, we had that meme going around this week that was like, what was your favorite meal as a child? And I was like, anything my mother didn't cook. She was a weird Italian. She didn't use a spice. You know what I mean? Like, there was no real garlic in my house. Nothing. We didn't use no spices. She had ragu in the cabinet. You know, SpaghettiOs and Campbell's soup. Like, no, we don't have none of that now. No, we don't.
My dad is Hungarian, and we had, like, crazy, like, sausages hanging from the ceiling and, like, peppers. That's cool.
Yes!
That they used to, like, hack off, and yeah, that's what we grew up with, so.
Cool. See, I'm not even sure what my grandmother really was, like, and she would do, like, a hamburger grape. Like, they were poor. Whatever the hell they were poor. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, there wasn't a whole lot of flavor. I mean, their big jam was ketchup and toast in the morning for breakfast. So, that kind of.
I've never heard of that.
He said, David just said, oh, my God. He ran across the room. No garlic. Yes. Her father, my grandfather, was off the boat Italian. There was never, I didn't even know what the hell real garlic was. I didn't peel garlic until I was an adult, okay? I'm telling you, and I would try to add like garlic salt and powder to like the jar sauce because I cooked dinner a lot as I got older. And my mom would be like, it's too spicy. The true story, we didn't have many spices in the cabinet. Mrs. Dash was a big hit in our family there for a minute. We couldn't use a lot of it. Mrs. Dash, man. Mm-mm. There was no vegetables. My mother didn't eat. If she ate a salad, she would make iceberg lettuce, okay, out of the bag, with croutons. She would put cucumbers in it, but she would put them out, tomatoes, pieces of pepperoni that out of the bag. Wasn't even like real pepperoni. Out of the bag with some pieces of cheese. That's it. That's all that was ever in a salad.
No, my favorite thing in the summer, my dad had a garden, and I had a little salt shaker in my pocket, and I would rip the tomatoes off the vine, and I would eat the tomatoes off the vine and with my little salt shaker.
That was we didn't have fruits and vegetables like that in our house. We had some bananas and apples. That was about it. Maybe some oranges occasionally. If it wasn't for my father, like, who was a fat man who loved different things, you know, there would be no palate. Like, my brothers are very simple eaters. Like her. Yeah. No vegetables. No.
Salt is spicy.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Yeah. No, she loves her salt.
Do you eat anything spicy? Has your palate evolved, Jeffrey?
Oh, yeah. Like, I eat everything, clearly. Look at me.
Sorry.
Oh, I got the dogs going. Yeah, no, I get down with everything. Yeah, I don't, I can't, you know. And I mean, I put too much spices in everything. You know, I have a rule that there's never enough garlic.
Well, that's true. There is.
Now that you found garlic?
Yeah, yeah.
If people are having garlic, you're fine.
Yeah. I put garlic in everything. Yeah, I tend to overspice everything. It's kind of intense. I went the opposite. So crazy. So I don't know if you guys have seen this or not, but there was an article shared by the boys in Australia. Let me see if I can do this. I've never actually tried to do this. Okay. So it was a story about this 21-year-old named Mackenzie, who was murdered in Australia. She had a 1-year-old little boy, and she was allegedly murdered by her boyfriend, Tyrone Thompson, who she had sought an order of protection for in October. He was arrested and convicted to 9 months before being eligible for parole, and he was released on March 9th. And he immediately contacted Mackenzie on March 25th. She was stabbed to death in her home after calling police saying he was breaking into her house. By the time they arrived, she was found outside bleeding to death. Her 1-year-old was found hiding inside of a cupboard covered in blood. The family has set up a GoFundMe to help with Elijah and to help with any costs that Mackenzie's family needs, raising him, with therapy for him. Elijah was also born with a cleft palate and has ongoing medical appointments and surgery since his birth. So if you're watching, if you can help, if you're on our page, if you could share the GoFundMe for this family, I mean, that would be amazing.
That's terrible.
And this is becoming a common issue in Australia.
is it really hard to get an order of protection or something?
Yeah, the cops just don't seem to care. I mean, we just had another story that we shared a couple of weeks ago. The same kind of a situation. Another woman kept trying to get an order of protection. She couldn't even get it. Called the cops, said that he was there, you know, the dude was there, you know, that he was going to kill her. They stopped. She didn't answer the door. So they went and had a lunch break. Came back and she was dead. He was inside murdering her as they were knocking on the door. And it really makes me wonder, like, what the hell is going on in Australia that now this little boy has to grow up without his mother? This dude was in jail for 9 months, gets out, contacts her immediately. Yeah, he was in jail. He was.
Oh, no, I thought you meant for killing her.
No, he was in jail for 9 months, got out, and immediately contacted her. Why wasn't he sent right back? And I mean, but this stuff doesn't just go on in just Australia. It happens here all the time, too.
Yeah,
it is not taken seriously. Women's safety and children's safety is not a priority of the police department.
Yeah. No, and there's a network, I believe, that was started called the Lavender. I want to say it's called the Lavender Network for children, especially that are in abusive situations. There was a story yesterday that I randomly saw on TikTok about a young child where his brother had already been taken out of the home and given to the grandparents, and this other child ran away to a friend's house, and the police got involved because the woman called the ambulance for this child because he had bruises all over his body and she wanted him to get checked out. And the police said, well, he was beating up his dad, so his dad has a right to beat him as long as he doesn't leave marks.
No, that's not how this works. No. Well, it's like, what was the little Gabriel, was it Gabriel Hernandez? Right? Was that his name in California where CPS was there constantly?
Yeah.
And they didn't take him away and they killed him.
It just happened here in central New York too with a kid with developmental disabilities, I believe. His parents, like CPS, like was there numerous times and the parents, he like died of neglect. Like they like starved him or whatever. I don't know the full story, so I don't want to go into it.
Right. Well, but here's the thing. Like, this happens all too commonly. I mean, there was just in central New York, we had a murder. It happened to be somebody I know that was murdered. One of the kids that pulled the trigger. Mother was constantly investigated for murder. She just now got sentenced for being involved with a child. It wasn't child porn. But like she was a part of like child
trafficking.
No, in a child sex situation. I don't think she was. I don't think she violated a child, but I think she watched it or she filmed it, something along those lines. But CPS had been at that house constantly, and the reason why I knew about the family was because they were in the kids were in the same foster care agency that I did private foster care for. So one of the CPS workers happened to have a child in my daycare years prior. They did nothing. They did not pull those kids out of the house knowing. The neighbors had called constantly. The mother would take off for weeks on end and leave the kids there alone. Why are these kids still at the house? Meanwhile, then flash forward, now the son's committed murder. And then the mother ends up in jail shortly thereafter. This could have all been prevented had you done your job correctly.
Well, and part of the problem is, unfortunately, with our social care, our social worker network and CPS are so overworked that it's...
I'll agree with that, for sure. It's absolutely
impossible to care for, it's impossible to care for the priority when also, in the same respect, people use it also as a weapon in like divorce cases or whatever, you know, grandparents against.
Well, it's interesting too. Like they definitely seem to cherry pick the cases they want to deal with. I had a case where they called me as a daycare provider and said, look, we're at a last resort here. Will you take these kids because we want to keep them out of the foster care system, but we need somebody to watch them. So the mom doesn't work, but we'll pay you to watch our kids just to keep them out of foster care. Okay. I mean, and then I've seen cases where the kids did not need to be pulled out of the home, but they pulled them out of the home and did nothing but give the parents a hard time, treat the parents like crap, mm-hmm. and not try to help them at all. And the parents were a product of the system, and they never helped them as children. And then they wonder why the parents have no trust. You threw them back into the wolf's den. And then you're wondering why they don't trust you as an adult? And then you take their kids from them. Meanwhile, the people that the kids should have been taken away from, you left them with them, and now they're murdering people.
Yeah, when we did foster care, I always wondered, there's a lot of families that just kind of need services. Like, we took care of these right. four kids whose parents, honestly, the kids only ate once a day. And one of the kids told somebody at school that they only ate once a day and they were kind of like struggling in their weight or whatever. And that's why they took them out of the house. But it was because the parents are, you know, poor. The dad works like around the clock. And the parents literally called us every single night to talk to their kids while they right. were with us. And like the whole plan was for them to go back, obviously. But I kept thinking to myself, like, if you're going to pay us to take care of the kids and you're going to send social workers over to our house three times a week or whatever, you're going to do all these different resources. Why don't you keep the kids in their own house, allow the parents that money so they can take care of their kids properly, and send the social workers to their house so they can teach them how to take care of their own kids? I don't understand, like, in that situation. I know certain situations. The long-term
damage that you've just created in that mm-hmm. house to not just the children, to the parents
yeah.
as well, is going to last a lifetime because you've scarred the children and you've scarred the parents. You've created a distrust with the system now.
Mm-hmm. In that particular situation, the two youngest were twins. It was two twin girls. They were 5 years old. And all the kids had really bad teeth because they just had bad hygiene and bad nutrition. And so they were with us for 2 days, and they already had them scheduled for an appointment to have all of her teeth ripped out of her mouth. So I had to take her. I've only known this little girl for 2 days. I had to take her to have her teeth ripped out. And these kids are from Rome, which is kind of far from Syracuse. So the parents couldn't just drive. They're poor. So I had to take her by myself, Joe and I. And I remember coming back and she was like, you know, in a lot of pain and everything. And we laid her in the bed and I was like, one of us was just going to stay with her. And I just tried to like rub her back. And she was just like, you know, like, and I was like, oh my God, I'm sorry. Cause she doesn't know me, you know, but mm-hmm. I felt so badly for her. And I was just like, these kids are sometimes, and the system does as best as, like, the people in the system are most of the time angels and they do the best they can. But like, sometimes the kids are just like pawns, I feel like. Like they're just moved around like chess pieces or something. And it's not, there's not a whole lot of regard for their, they always say it's for their well-being, but like you were just saying, the amount of damage they do to them in the process, is it for their well-being or?
Well, and I think it's hard too, especially for you and I, because we've been foster parents. We've adopted children. We've seen the dark side of the system. We've mm-hmm. seen what it's done to children, right? So there's great stories that have come out of the system. But we've also seen the horrific side of it. And I think for me, seeing the damage that it did to my children and what it did to me, I'll never be the same.
Mm-mm. Oh, I'll never and be the same I, after going through
you,
that.
You know, and the damage, the extra damage that it caused my children, is not something that I'll ever forgive.
Yeah.
From people that were supposed to protect them. So.
Well, and people that are also trained to protect, like trained in the best ways.
No, and at the end of the day, like it really was about money to them. You know, yeah. It was the bottom line. So it was, you know, it was pretty disgusting.
I agree.
Everybody's just popping in the chat room now. Hey, kids, hey, it's getting pretty dark in here. And we're lying about the title. It says Atomic Habits, chapter 8 through 14. But we're not talking about that tonight. Kelly's off.
Yeah.
So, If you're just tuning in, let me bring this up again. You can go to our page if you're on facebook.com/myuncensoredradio if you're listening. And there's a GoFundMe page. It's Justice for Mackenzie and Elijah. If you can, go share that. Donate if it's possible. It's a family that could really use your help based in Australia. Has anybody else had any sort of personal relationship with domestic violence in their life as a child? Has anybody been affected by it? That they want to talk about, I guess.
Go ahead, Dana.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've had a lot of different kinds. I mean, there was like the touchy kind, and then there was the hitty kind. I mean, it leaves problems for you forever.
Yeah.
I mean, wait, you're,
the same person would do that?
Oh, yeah. Like, my dad started out one way, and then when he couldn't get away with that anymore, he just started beating on me. He took out his frustration that way. It was cool. And then when my mom found out, she was like, oh, well, you're ruined now. And then she stopped, like, she just kind of fed me and gave me a place to sleep. And so then I was neglected. And then she was disabled, so then I had to take care of her. So then, like, I had to spend, like, my teenage years, like, just, like, going grocery shopping and doing the housework and taking care of the yard and picking up prescriptions.
Did your dad go to jail?
How old were you when she found out?
11. About 11. But it stopped when I was like five or six.
Jesus Christ.
When did he start it?
Before I could remember. Like, potty training was weird.
Wow.
So, but yeah, so it's like, I don't know. And that's the kind of stuff that stays with you for a long time, because like, even after my parents got divorced and I was like taking care of my mom, even though she didn't like show any affection towards me or like give me any love or comforting ever, like that's what normal was. Like normal was your mom's just there to sit in a room and watch TV and you take care of her and don't expect any emotional reciprocation. So
was that part of her disability?
Well, no, once she found out that my dad did stuff to me, I was like ruined. Like she didn't really want anything
she couldn't
to do
handle
with
it.
Me. Wow. So it just kind of like, I don't know, I'd get yelled at a lot and just kind of left to do whatever. And it wasn't great. But I mean, the kind of problems that causes is like, I'm a fairly intelligent person. So I obviously know, like, I kind of raised myself like, hey, you're good enough, you can do it. And then like as an adult, like that was the formation of what a healthy relationship is for me. Like it's like, well, I'm gonna, it's easy for me to take care of somebody who's going to be emotionally neglectful. It's easy for me to like think that that's normal. It's hard for me to recognize a healthy relationship because I don't have a fundamental understanding of what one looks like on the receiving end. Like I don't know.
Well, isn't that the thing, right? Yeah. We all kind of repeat what we learned as children. Like that's our baseline. That's normal.
Yeah. So it's weird for me to think of like somebody like liking me. Like it's like, well, as long as you aren't like hitting me or like stealing from me, then you're the best person ever. But that might not be the case. I can't put it together.
That makes for like a low bar.
Yeah. So all I try to do is get appreciation and affection by doing as much as I can for people I care about and hope that I can get some appreciation.
Well, Dana, I mean, I really appreciate like how vulnerable you just were in sharing that with us. Because I know that's not easy. And obviously, you know, I've had that conversation a long time ago. And it's pretty deep. And I think you've turned out amazing. I think you're one of the kindest and most caring people I've ever met in my life. And I think you are the greatest dad.
That's the other thing. It's like you form all this self-doubt too, because you're like, am I actually a nice person or am I just this way because I'm desperate for like affection and for people to like me? You know, like, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure we all have parts of that in us.
Yeah.
You know, from starving of what we didn't get as children or what we did get that we didn't want.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah. Too much. No, thank you. Yeah. I mean, for me, like, it was the constant fighting, you know? Like, that's everybody fought. And it was like, oh, if you fight and they stay, that means love. Mm-hmm. If you love and they fight back, they love you. And like in my marriage, he never fought back. And not, I don't mean like physical fighting, but I mean like when you have an argument or when you're upset, you know, and you're like, what are you doing? You're just going to sit there. You don't have anything to say. To me, that was like the most disrespectful, like the worst thing you could ever do in the world to me. Like, you don't have anything to say right now?
Oh, and I would do that all the time. Like,
whenever there's an argument,
yeah, I'll just take a step back and look, in my head, I just rationalize it like, wow, this is a confrontation and this feels really uncomfortable. I just want to make it stop. So, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
Well, if he said that, though, and if he would have even just said, like, I don't know what to say right now. I just need a minute. Like, I could have handled that, you know? Yeah. But, like, he would just shut down. And to me, it was like, you don't care about me at all.
Yeah.
Like, and I couldn't handle that. Like, that, it would, like, send me into a fucking tailspin of, like, you don't care at all. Like, you don't say, you don't have nothing to say? Like, do you not see that I'm upset, that I'm hurt? And
I think so. I think sometimes people like shut down a little bit because I know like growing up in a house with like my stepdad was like a raging alcoholic and, you know, would scream and be violent sometimes. Like when you grow up as an adult, when that starts happening, like you retreat, like almost like you did as a kid, like you kind of shut down.
Oh yeah. You're instantly, you go back to whatever age that trauma resulted from it. Like it's ingrained in you when it happened over and over to you as a kid, like, you don't have a choice. Like if I get in a situation like where it, like if I feel like it's recreating something from my childhood, some kind of discomfort, there's nothing I can do to stop the anxiety or the self-deprecation, right? Or like just even like, right, the physical reaction. Like I'll get like a really tight knot in my throat, get indigestion, and like it's just, I don't know a way to make it not happen. Like you can sit there and like, I've tried the whole meditative like mindfulness of it, like, okay, I'm watching this happening, I'm having this feeling and paying attention to it and trying to work through it, but it never really seems to go away. Like it's always going to be there. I haven't found a way to make that.
Does it lessen it? It lessens it, doesn't it, though, a little bit?
I think, you know, for me, the sucky part is the more I expose myself to those uncomfortable situations and the more I have practice, like, working through them, and the more I build, like, reinforcement that, yeah, this is something I can handle. This is something that I can work through as a healthy adult. I have the tools to, like, cope with this in a normal way. Like, the more I put myself in uncomfortable situations that trigger those responses, the less those responses happen as intensely. But I mean, you can't plan for anything like that. It's just, it happens just through normal day-to-day stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When it happens, it just comes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it'll even happen at work. Like I can, like if I feel like a pinch of a deadline coming up and I feel like I'm behind at work, like I'll like, oh shit, I'm going to get in trouble. It's going to be the worst thing ever. Oh my God. And like, you know, those anxiety thoughts just start rolling and you're like, I'm going to lose my job. My family's going to fall apart. Oh my God. Like I better get this paper written. Like it's ridiculous.
I had the thing where my mother would always tell me I don't deal in reality. So there was two things that I can really stick out. I don't know. It was like 12 somewhere in there, like middle school. And like her and my father, like she did try to like hide when they would fight. They'd go out to the garage or whatever. So like my brothers never noticed, but you know, I was older. I could pick up on it. And I'd said to my best friend's mom, his stepmom, you know, like, I think they're going to get a divorce or whatever. So she just kind of said something to my mom, like, oh, if you need somebody to talk to or whatever, Jeffrey said, like, you know. And of course, like that just pissed my mother off because you don't tell anybody anything.
Oh, yeah. Because,
you know, You know,
all our parents, the same thing. Right. It's like, you keep your mouth shut. You don't talk about family business.
So I broke the family code. And it was like, you don't deal in reality. You're telling lies. And then, of course, years later, what do I find out? Oh, she was looking at apartments. She was going to leave him. And I'm like, but you just looked at me in the face and you told me I didn't deal in reality. Like, I was a kid. And you would sit there and scream at me and tell me not to tell Nick that he was bad when he would, like, do all the crazy stuff he would do as a little kid, because that's what he would become. What do you think telling me that I didn't deal in reality was going to do to me? Yeah. Why do you think that I have to go and, like, fight people when they tell me or they don't believe me or, you know, when I get accused of something or, you know what I mean? Like, when there's just any kind of uncomfortable situation that I have to prove that I'm on the right side of things or whatever the case is, like, I have to be scrappy about it, right? Like, I have
to. Well, you're a gaslit.
Yeah, like, and that was kind of the thing all the time. Or, like, when my father and I, like, would get into physical confrontations, she would, like, yell at me to stop. And, like, again, the kid, Mike, was there. He saw the whole thing going down. The dude was pinning me to the floor. I wasn't doing nothing. And she's like, you need to stop. And I'm screaming at her to help me. And she's blaming me. He's a grown man. I'm a 12-year-old. He's got his elbow into my neck so that I can't breathe. And I scratched him in the face because I, at that point I couldn't breathe. I'm doing anything I can to get away from him. Mm-hmm. And it's I'm the one causing the problem. And he's chasing me through the house. And my friend's like going, the fuck's going on? He didn't come from a house like that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So all the crazy shit he would witness at my house, you know? So I think that's why, too, his father, my parents never took me to his house, very rarely. His father always would come get me. He was at his dad's house every other weekend. His father always came, got me. There was no questions asked. And I think that's why they always did, because they knew.
They knew.
And want to be home. Mm-hmm. They never, you know. So if I wasn't at his house, I was at my aunt's house, or I was at my grandparents' house. I was at somebody's house, but I wasn't trying to be home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that was more common back then to be like with your grandparents and stuff.
Yeah.
I was always out. I had a very explosive house. We had a very, very explosive physical house. And my parents worked 7 days a week. They bought a dealership that was on the brink of bankruptcy, probably until the 90s. And then they took wedding pictures Fridays and Saturdays. And then Sundays, they did something else. My dad was never around. He was the constant, like, make promises, never show up for anything. And my mom would have to make some excuse up. And she worked for him. She never had her own income. It was, and she always favored my brother over me. Like, my mother and I were never close, ever. So I was always kind of by myself, and like you, like, went to somebody else's house or like was out by myself, which I think was why I was ripe for the picking to be sexually assaulted when I was younger.
Yeah,
because I was the only girl in the neighborhood. So, like, when I would go over to the neighbor's house to, you know, to play with the other kids, the older boys took advantage of that and knew they could because, you know, I don't know any better. I had one little girlfriend who left in fifth grade, and her brother sexually assaulted both of us. And then there was another, I can still remember what I was wearing. I can still remember the place, the smell, the everything I can remember about
it. Oh yeah. Isn't that the worst weird? When one of those smells brings something back? Like you're just somewhere and you smell a thing and you're like, there's that feeling. Cool.
Yeah, instantly. And it's, I mean, I started bringing, and my girlfriend and I just talked about this. I can remember being in seventh grade and bringing peach schnapps in like a spray bottle, like a hairspray bottle. And, like, being in the middle of class, spraying peach schnapps in my mouth. Or, like, there was this test and scratching myself until I gave myself a scar on my hand.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to. I did that one. The sissy test.
Yes, exactly. I still have that on my head. Like, still
there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I can still see mine.
I mean, now I tell myself, I, you know, I was a cutter. I mean, that was the way I like relieved my anxiety, and, you know, trigger warning to anybody out there listening. I mean, now to me, and it was kind of how Kelly and I started talking about this, was now I get tattoos. Like, my husband knows when I say I have to go get therapy. That's what I have to go get a tattoo. Like, it's a way for me to release that
endorphins.
Yeah. That anxiety. That's just like,
yeah,
that's pent there that I just can't release any other way healthily.
Which I is mean,
exactly a word, but
I get it. I never cut, but I would take pins and like stick them,
mm-hmm,
like thread them through my hands.
Oh, I used to love doing that.
And like, I was, you know what I mean? Like,
did you ever sew like thread through like calluses, yeah, and stuff? Yeah.
I didn't have calluses. Bitch, I've always had soft hands. I'm a lady.
I was like, I don't have calluses.
Tana, what kind of a boy do you think you're talking to?
I used to take it and it would like go back and forth to like calluses and stuff and make like a spider web on my hand out of it.
No, honey. Maybe you were a little too rosy pominy. You know what I'm saying? You should have used some Jergens or something. Like, honey.
What?
But like, I love getting shots. I love needles. Like, I like the pain. I do like the physical pain of it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, so too.
I definitely can relate to that.
Yeah, it's like the only way for me to like get that feel that relief of stress. And no matter how much I exercise, it doesn't come out. Like, focusing on what I'm eating, it doesn't come out. Though those items have helped me focus my anxiety, that other extra step, I have to get a tattoo. And I mean, it sounds like such a, you know, first world problem. I have to get a tattoo, but
I would like to go out into the woods when we lived in the country, and I would take a bunch of like glass and I would just smash the shit of it on.
Let's
like
go to rock. A rage room. I need to.
Yeah,
go,
yeah, like that. Always, I'm like, because I'm like, before I had kids.
Brian, don't they have one of those in Marcellus? I thought they did.
They do.
I think they might. Yeah, it's a smash room.
I'll
have to check that out. Yeah. I'll have to get back to you on that.
I think I have a pamphlet. I'll have to look for it.
I'll be we home in a few weeks. Trip. Let's do it. Yeah, let's go. We'll film it because I'm ready. I used to once a year, like it without fail. Usually, probably maybe once a year, I would smash some kind of furniture. It would like I would just end up snapping, and Joe knew it was coming. Like, and I'd be like, just get away, you know. And like whatever I was moving or whatever it was got destroyed. Like I just there'd be all this rage inside. I mean, again, this was another thing. I called my mother. It was like, is there like a history of rage? Is there something in the family? Like the people, like there's just, you know, everything builds up and I there's this rage in me that I'm just so angry. And she's like, you know what? You really are just so dramatic. There's just, you know, and just she blew it off. And I'm like, you know what, bitch? Maybe it's you. You're the problem. Like, have you ever looked at your husband and what he does? Like, maybe this came from you and him. And then, oh, I don't know, maybe your father. You know, he put a bullet in your mother. You think maybe that played a part in it? I don't know. And then your husband's father did the same thing. Do you think maybe your kid's calling you saying he's got a rage issue that you should listen?
And is it like, for you, is it like all of a sudden? Because that's what would happen to me. Like, it wouldn't build up for me. I would feel it like hit like a ton of bricks. I would feel fine. And then one thing would set me off.
Yeah, it'd be like something would, like, usually I'd wake up and I'd be irritated. Like, I don't know if it'd be bad dreams. Like, and I think usually there is something to do with my dreams. I did go to an energy healer one time, and it was really a trippy experience. It was after the murder-suicide. And she said, you know, whether it's your bag or not, whatever. But she was like, your dreams are your birthright. I'm like, oh, there's something to it. Because I'm like, I notice, like, whenever it is my dreams, like, even if they're hazy in my memory, I'm like, it affects me the next day. Mm-hmm. And it can affect my whole mood. And, like, there's just some days where I'm like, I'm super irritated all day long. for no reason. And I'm like, what? Why? Why am I so angry today? And then I can go from angry to crying like that. And I'm like, what is this? What is this? And then, you know what I mean? And then when you have kids with special needs, you're like, okay, hi, doctor. Yeah, I have to be on medication because
I'm going to kill someone.
You can't. Well, you can't. You know what I mean? You're outside breathing. You know what I mean? Like, you have to stay in control of yourself. And it is a very difficult thing to do. It is not easy. It is the greatest challenge of my life to
Me too.
Be aware of my emotions and myself. And I don't always succeed, you know, like I've yelled at them when they don't deserve it. Just because I'm not okay. And I don't even know what the problem is. And I'm a grown man. You know what I mean? I'm looking at 40s a couple years away and I couldn't tell you why I'm upset.
Baby, I'm 45 and I'm going to be 45 next week. And I can't tell you 90 times why I'm upset.
You got a bat in the house?
I don't know, girl, but there was something large flying around. It wasn't a bat. It was some kind of bug. The door's open because it's a nice day. Nothing like breaking you out of some emotional trauma talk. Like some kind of flying critter. Like, bitches, you'll see just all of a sudden, you'll see my fat ass jump and the laptop go flying and then I'll be gone.
It just grabs him in the face.
Bats are really cute, though. I will say, bats are super cute. They have rabies, but...
Not all of them.
Not all of them, but they are cute. Jana, I can feel that because after my breakup and a miscarriage, I was that. And I had an ex, speaking of domestic violence, whose kink was holding a gun to my head. He was an air marshal, a federal air marshal.
Well, I was cool.
Yeah, that was his kink.
Wait, what?
That was, what Kat was saying? No, I was saying Janet had said prior to that.
No,
I had a really bad breakup.
I'm right there. It's right there. I just, you know, I threw it a few years because I didn't want to say how close I was.
Say how close.
It's right there. Right there.
You're going to be 39 again this year?
Oh my God, am I?
I don't know.
83.
You're literally going to be 39 this year.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. No, I thought I was going to be 38. Oh.
No, that's me, honey.
Oh, shit. I'm not ready. No, it's fine. I don't care. Fuck it.
You'll be fine.
I'm just going to keep using my Estee Lauder. As long as I don't lose too much weight too quick, hopefully my face will hold up. You know what I'm saying?
You'll be good.
You know, Queer as Folk made me totally scared of 30, and it was fine.
My worst year was 36. I hated everything about 36. Hated it. And now I'm fine. I don't feel like I look 45. I don't feel like I act 45. No. Like, whatever. Good care.
It is what it is.
Yes. And yes, Kat, that is very true. My mother's whole side is addicts. Is my mother's whole side. Both my grandparents were alcoholics.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, you know, and that's in my family. Like, my grandparents owned a bar when I was a kid, but nobody drank in my family.
Really?
I didn't really see drinking as a child. I did find out here, you know, when I was an adult, that all the guys kind of would take off at the holidays when they'd all go outside because we had like a jukebox and a foosball table and a pool table or whatever. They'd all go out and smoke pot. But nobody really drank. I mean, maybe they'd have a beer or something on a holiday, but I never. And what did I do? It's the minute I turned 20. I was wilding out drinking like I was blackout drunk 3 nights a week. Every week for a couple of years in my early 20s. But I never saw it as it wasn't a thing I saw. Where does that come from?
Your past. I mean, supposedly addiction can skip a generation. I don't know but like I said, both my mother's parents were alcoholics. My mother raised her brother and sister, basically, because there was quite an age difference. But my mother left the house at 17, married my dad at 18. And
well, I always tried to explain it to like my mom or whatever. It was like, it's the only time I can get my brain to stop. And then I could just go and dance. And that's what we would do. I mean, as Brian was there, he was with, we would dance for hours. And you just, you didn't have to think about anything. You know, there was no stress. And it was a safe place. You know, we could be gay, we could be straight, didn't matter. We could dance, we could carry on. But it was the only time I could kind of like not, I was always worried as a kid what everybody else thought, you know, and I was the yes kid. I had to do everything everybody asked of me. And I hated that. And you know what I mean? I was the altar server. I taught religion to the poor kids. So anytime the school, oh, will you do this? Will you sell the candy bars? Will you go help this one? Will you stay after school and help this? Will you do this? Will you do that? I did it all. Will you babysit this one? I hated babysitting. I hated, you know, I don't want to watch nobody's asshole children. And I did it all.
You had that and Catholic guilt, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was great. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, like, I was raised Roman Catholic, right, Jeffrey?
Me too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know. Oh,
until we were kicked out. We were kicked out.
Until we were kicked out.
That's I went awesome. To Catholic school straight through high school until I was like, bye.
How do you feel? You're... Oh, you're going to go to hell. You should feel really bad.
You're going to go to hell.
And the crazy thing is if the school that I went to in elementary school was around today, I wouldn't even blink an eye about sending the kids there. I'd send them in a heartbeat. Because it was more of a nice private school that just taught some morals and values. It's a nice teachings about a man who had 12 friends who may or may not have been homosexual. Who knows? You know,
who flipped a table and was not white, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. He was not white.
Could have been a drag queen.
Yeah, the devil's lettuce, right. And there was one time in a photo album, like I was looking, I remember as a kid, I'm like, Mom, I didn't know Dad smoked cigarettes. And then the next thing I knew, that photo was gone. And it wasn't until I was an adult that it dawned on me it wasn't a cigarette that was in that picture. Yeah. Right. Oh, and that's another thing. Like, as a kid, like, I started gaining weight in first grade. And after first grade, I'd gain, like, 20 pounds a year. And she clearly knew that the Oreos were disappearing out of the drawer when nobody was around. Mm-hmm. Do you think she stopped buying them or she said, like, hey, Jeffrey, when nobody's home, there's a lot of food disappearing. Like, she didn't notice her kid was closet eating.
You were binging. You were emotionally.
I
wasn't in trouble as long as I only ate one box of Little Debbie snacks a day.
One box?
Yeah. If I could spread out a box for the whole day and I didn't go beyond that box, I was good. I didn't get in trouble.
Oh, she'd have killed me if I ate a box. But there'd be like four boxes, so I could have one of each box, and then I could eat a half a row of Oreos, and then I could eat a little bowl of ice cream, and then I'd eat, you know, whatever.
Oh, those oatmeal cookies and the zebra cakes and the nutty bars and the
cosmic brownies.
Oh yeah, the cosmic cookies where there's like Rice Krispies around like a piece of like. It was like caramel inside.
We didn't have any of that. It was a big deal. This is how sad this was. This was a big deal when we had a babysitter and we would get chocolate chips, like pretending to be zoo animals, like, and being good for them.
Wait, you mean like chocolate chips?
Chips?
Just chocolate chips.
That would be a treat?
That was our treat. Like, that's what we...
y'all were like real poor.
Yeah, we didn't have...
Well, you know, the only reason why we started getting Little Debbie's was because my brother got hit by the Little Debbie man. I swear to God, he got ran the fuck over. He was underneath the Little Debbie tire. You know what I'm saying? He had to get air.
Are you serious?
Yes, you don't remember that in front of the middle school. No. My mother, like, and it was, she was working at the apartment building. She was right there. She heard the accident. She was traumatized, and I had just made this sandwich. We lived around the corner, kind of. And she called. She's like, Nick, I hit my truck. You know, she was losing it. I went running up there. She was covered in blood. I mean, it was scary as shit, you know?
Oh, wow.
And they were going to, the principal's there. He's covered in blood. She's, you know, to see her parent, you know, this woman who, regardless at that point, because I feel like my life was divided into two, like, I feel like listening to Dana's horror stories, like I had this younger childhood that was great, you know, like she was this mom who did all these fun things with me and she was good. And then she kind of had her own psychotic break and then it went bad. Who she's just covered in blood and she's like having this nervous breakdown. And they have to airlift him. And my father's working on a construction site. We don't, you know, cell phones weren't really very common back then. He doesn't have one. One of my school friends had seen him wherever he was working, and he was working by their house. And she's like, "You got to go find your father." And I had just gotten my license or something. And the way that the scene was, they were blocking the driveway to her where she worked at this apartment complex. And she had an Oldsmobile Custom Cruiser wagon. You remember the Shaggin' Wagon, Brian?
Yeah.
I took this thing down a hill and over a curb that wasn't, you know, that I had no business doing, and flew through that. Like, the police are all just looking because this big ass station wagon, it was like something out of National Lampoon's. I just was like, boom, that bitch was in the air.
You were like that viral TikTok video of that Tesla going over that.
It was just gone. Went and found a father, and then we had to go fly to Syracuse. And, you know, there was no contact. She couldn't get in the helicopter with him. We had no idea what was, you know, how bad it was because the tire was on him.
Oh, God.
And she was never, that was one of the things that she was never the same after that.
I got run over by a car one time at Sears.
Shut up.
Yeah. It was my own fault. I was so dumb. Oh my God. Oh.
What?
Oh, man.
Did you get free little Debbie's too?
No, I got yelled at, and then we had to have a safety meeting at work about it.
I got yelled at.
So you were an adult when this happened.
Yeah, I was. It was Jeffrey. It was like when I was going out with Katie.
Oh my God! Wait, I think I remember this story. Okay, wait, do it. Tell it, please.
Okay, yeah, I got I got out of work. I worked in the shipping and receiving, like the back warehouse part, and so like we were like the ones that loaded like the tillers and dishwashers and stuff in the back of your car after you bought it, and so I was just getting out of work, and there was this girl. Her name was Jen, and she was pulling up her friend Ashley's car. And it was like this old like 91 Chevy Cavalier, like back when they were like still like square. Mm-hmm. And so she's pulling it up and I'm just walking out of work and she's going really slow. So I'm like, oh, I'll be funny. So I walk up and I like bump the hood of her car and I like do this, oh, and I like pretend to fall down in front of her car. And then she keeps pulling forward because apparently she looked down to change the radio station right when I did that and didn't like see me at all. And so here I'm like laying flat on my back and the car's like just rolling towards me. And I'm like, all right. But, like in a split second decision, I had to try to like get up and run out of the way. And I'm like, I'll probably get mangled up underneath here if I try to do that. So I just like laid down flat. And I tried to, like, just hope it would go over me. And so, like, I lay down, and it starts, like, down here. And it, like, pushes up into my ribs. And it's, like, jamming my arm all underneath me. Oh, on the other side, like, kind of, like, pushing me along the road. And then, finally, like, my arm bites in. And it, like, pulls up on top of me and, like, goes, like, diagonal up over my shoulder. And at first, I'm like, oh, I'm going to die. And then I'm holding up a car. And I'm like, this hurts, but oh my God, I'm holding up a car. Then it started to hurt really bad. Like all the air is getting crushed out and I can feel it's like, ugh. And I'm like banging on the fender of the car. And she gets up to above my shoulder and she realizes she's on top of me and then backs back over top of me all the rest of the way over.
You should have just been going with this, like, that
I know, I know. So. I get, I like, as soon as the car's off of me, I like spring up to on my feet and I'm like, and she thinks I'm like dying. So she gets out of the car and she's like crying. And I'm like, I'm okay. And I'm like hugging her. I'm like, I'm fine. It's okay. And, like, So I just kind of, I paced back and forth for a while. And all I had on was, like, you know, those, like, six-pack of white T-shirts that you get, like, for undershirts? It was like, a white T-shirt and a pair of jeans. And, like, so my T-shirt's all, like, this whole arm, like, the whole side of it's just, like, road rash and, like, bloody. And, like, my chest literally has, like, this giant tire tread tear across the front of it. And I'm like, I gotta go. I'm supposed to pick up my girlfriend. She's gonna be mad if I'm late. And they're like, are you sure? Are you okay? You probably are bleeding internally. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure I'm fine. And like, so like, I drive to Katie's house, and like on the way there, I'm just like, oh, this hurts so bad. I just need to lay down. I might be bleeding inside. So I get there, and she's pissed off. She's like, well, now it's too late to go anywhere. I'm like, can we just sit on the couch and watch TV or something? I don't feel good. And like, so like, I sat down on the couch, and like, her mom and dad are there, and her sister. And they're like, what happened to you? And I'm like, I got run over by a car. And they're like, did you go to the hospital? I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm fine. Like, so this was like before I had a cell phone. And like, I had 2 days off before the next day that I had to work. And so like 2 days, I'm like, the next day I was sore, but I'm like, all right, I'm not dying. I'm just sore. I just got hurt a little bit. And then the next day after that, I felt a little better. And I'm like, all right, I'll be all right. So then when I go back to work, and I'm like, I'm going to wear my Superman t-shirt today. Like, so I show up wearing my Superman t-shirt, and they're like, oh my God, we tried calling you, but we didn't have a number that was good for you. We thought you died.
Like, so replaced you already.
Yeah, it's serious. They're just like, everyone thought I just went off and died like a dog that got hit by a car. Like, so then they had to have a safety meeting, and they like made me stand up there, and they're like, pick up your shirt, and I like pick up my shirt, and there's just this big black tire tread bruise, like in the exact print of the tire tread. Like, it was, like, this perfect, like, belt of tire print across my, like, chest and everything from where the tire rolled over me. They're like, this is what it looks like when you get run over by a car. They're like, are we going to ever mess around in front of the driveway when people are coming up, pulling up cars? And I'm like, no. So they, like, berated me in front of, like, everyone there. And, like, all the kids my age were, like, laughing about it. And I was just, like, standing up there, like.
And you realize if they did that to you today, you could sue them.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh. Having been a paralegal for a workman's comp firm, yes. And let me tell you, they were happy that you did not go to their insurance company.
Yeah, for real.
And then they berated you for it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was just one of many times that I've gotten almost dead. I don't know. Like, I keep, you know, at a certain point, I was just like, oh, maybe I'm going to die. This will be nice. I kind of look forward to it now. It's just kind of like, well, it's going to happen.
He's like a cat, Jeffrey.
Like, he's not looking forward to it, or he's not looking for it, but, you know, he's open to it if it happens.
The last time was Ecuador. He was telling us all about that.
Yeah, well, I didn't almost die there. Well, no, I did almost die in that lake when I got stuck in the... I got stuck in a lake. I got stuck, like, waist deep in this lake mud bog that was, like, trying to pull me under. And, like, everybody's just watching me trying to get out of there, and they're like, he's getting deeper. And I'm just, like, standing there trying to yank myself out in my underwear. It was pretty bad. I almost died that time, I guess. Yeah.
This one talk about she tried to run her husband over once.
Yeah.
I need to know that story. We're going to have her on to come tell us.
For real. I want
to
hear about
you
got to
aim for, like, the neck or something. People are surprising.
You got to aim for the neck.
You know, the grandfather that shot my grandmother, I tried to run him over.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the transmission slipped on the car. It was my friend's. She had a... It was a 1989 or 90 Lexus, and it was real hood. Like, the steering wheel was duct tape, like the airbag had gone off, you know what I mean? Like, the muffler didn't really, was non-existent, so it was super loud.
Well, he went into Comic-Con.
Oh yeah. Well, we were in my driveway that I grew up in, and like there was a door and stairs, and it was a hill, and he was standing kind of in front of those stairs and the door. And he like yelled, you fucking faggot at me. And like, there was a whole thing going on. But that was like the final straw. He told me I looked like an AIDS patient, at, you know, coming down the driveway because I had my hair bleached or whatever and spiked up.
I would have beaten his.
Well, right. And I like, here's the thing. I was never afraid of him. Like I told, you know, I started first telling this man off at 10 years old. Nobody else in the family ever had balls to say anything. Like they were all genuinely afraid of him. Now I know why.
For you
know
good what reason. I mean? Like,
right, because at one point when she moved in with us, I said something to him on the phone, and she said across from me, she's like, you shouldn't have said that to him. We had to call the cops and have them come take us to get her shit, because she's like, he's going to kill you. And I'm like, you're crazy. He ain't going to kill me. but yeah, I floored it, and in the transmission drop, but the car like leaped, you know, and he fell backwards, and he started rolling down the drive. He was really scared for his life. And after that, though, he really fucked with me because he knew, had that car not malfunctioned.
You were ready. Dead.
Yeah, he would have been dead, and I'd have been in prison. And I really don't have any regrets. Like, I would have done it, and I'd have been okay with it. Because I hated that man. In retrospect, I'd have saved his life. He'd have never got a chance to shoot her because his ass would have been dead. So I would have been a hero.
I saved her life.
You would have.
Yep. Didn't even know it. All right, kids, we made it through another week 7.
We did it.
Another week 7.
We did it. We didn't talk about Atomic Habits, chapter 8 through 14, but we'll do that next week.
Next week.
Kelly will help us.
Oh, wait. Oh, she said, oh, I might tag it. Okay. No, he chased me and I got in the car, but it's a whole story. Okay, girl. We're going to get the, I need this whole story. You're going to have to message me something. We're going to tape a video. Yeah, we need the whole story. Okay, send a video.
But only if you buy some Melaleuca from Jeffrey.
Yeah, I know how much you love an MLM. Enjoyed having his hand. Yeah. What she did? Okay, this is get why now that of course the show's. I dated a guy who enjoyed having his hand ran over real slow with a car. I left him because he was giving girls foot massages at work. He was not attracted to anything but feet. So nope.
Oh no. Real
fit. Honey, okay, listen, we got a thing where we ask on the other show how many quarters. I mean, is he real attractive and he's attracted to feet? I'm saying, like, what's his number?
No. No.
I got a pair of feet.
Although there's good money to be made with feet, evidently, on the internet.
Yeah, listen, I'm not opposed to nothing. Look at Jamie. He's like, what the
hell? I got kind of nice looking feet.
I mean, I have nice feet.
Well, start you do have them, Dana. You have nice feet, Joyner.
Sell Dana, your body, you Dana.
Sell your body. Sell your body.
I wonder if you could do an OnlyFans page, but with just feet.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, guys.
They have them.
I got a fresh pan of baked beans. Guess what? Tootsies are going in it tonight.
Oh, God. But yes.
Damn, you gave me a good idea.
I'm going to do that. Look at all these people are coming in like
beaten beans. Beaten beans.
And that, you guys, is how we ended up this way. Bye-bye. Bye.